Spring into deals for seasonal savings. Shop select 1-pint annuals for just $1. Plus, get a free additional Cobalt 40-volt 2-amp-hour battery when you buy select Cobalt 40-volt trimmer and blower combo kit. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid to 5/6. Annuals offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a very special edition of Truth and Justice. You might notice the sound is a little different than our normal recording because I am not in our normal recording studio. I'm actually recording today from our school studio in our broadcast journalism program. And I'm joined today by four very special guests. Many, many of you over last year were listening to my students' podcast called The Underestimated Podcast. And they are back after almost a full school year of work with season two of Underestimated. And I'm joined by one member of each of the four groups to introduce themselves, share a little bit about the class, and talk about what you guys can expect in season two of Truth and Justice. So first and foremost, I want to introduce my four guests today. I am joined by...
Hi, my name is Gracie.
Hi, my name is Colton.
Hi, my name is Chelsea.
Hi, my name is Tegan.
So these are four members, one from each of the four groups that you guys are going to be hearing. Chelsea, you might already recognize her voice, not only from last season, but also her group, which, who consists of how many people in your group, Chelsea?
Now, before? Just me.
Just you. Yeah. So Chelsea was part of the Jeanette Robertson group last year, which was a pretty big group. I think you guys had like six or seven people.
Yeah, we had seven and then we had six.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there was a little staffing change throughout the year last year. But at the end of that year, they were all seniors except Chelsea. And she was so invested in the case that she decided to take the class again this year and returned on her own to continue on. So Chelsea, I guess we'll start with you. Why'd you come back this year?
I felt like my work wasn't finished yet. I mean, we left the podcast on such a huge cliffhanger where it was like, well, if I don't continue it, then who is? Like,
yeah.
She deserved more coverage on her case than what we gave her.
Yeah. And it's been a struggle this year because number one, Chelsea was on her own. And you guys, my audience knows that I still am super invested in that case as well. So, I was trying to help Chelsea along as we went, picking up where we left off last year. And we had a real struggle when we got into the beginning of the year. We couldn't really get anybody to talk to us.
When I reached out, a lot of people didn't respond or they passed away. So like, the leads that we had, it was kind of hard because, how do you phrase it? Like, they were old and they didn't have social media.
Well, I mean, I think that's how you phrase it, right? That's exactly what happened. And then there was two, that's why you picked it last year, because, no one was covering it. No one was doing anything about it. It was a case from 1983, and we put it into this podcast, and your guys' podcast was a huge hit last year with, over 100,000 downloads. And it brought a lot of attention to the case, which was great. But then it also, I think, brought some other folks out of the, you know, some other creators and some other locals. And it seemed like there were other people that want or are in the process of trying to do stories about the case that were there locally that kind of shut down your work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like people didn't want to talk to you because they were talking to somebody else. And yeah, so it was unfortunate, but you did manage to find a way to honor Jeanette. And through this, you want to talk a little bit? I mean, at this point, when people hear this, your first two episodes, well, your last two episodes also are out. So if they've already listened, they know this. But for anybody that hasn't, what did you decide to do with your episodes for Jeanette this year?
Over the summer, I got access to her diary. And at first, I was just going to just cover like one episode on it, you know, talk about what she talked about in her diary. But after not being able to get a lot of responses from people or like kind of build more evidence and build my leads, I kind of had to like shift directions. And so after reading it, I got a really deep look into her life and seeing like her everyday life, what it was like in Reed City for her, what her job was like, to like every detail. And so I decided that for my last two episodes, I was just going to take the audience through what the months leading up to her death was like.
Yeah. And it's really powerful. You know, at first I was like, well, at least we'll put that's information the public doesn't have, so we can give it to them. But then as you put it together and I listened to your episode, your two episodes, it's important and really kind of impactful to hear like what were her inner thoughts when she was going, like you captured the day she got the job at Gamble's, and you also captured in the couple days leading up to her death, you know, she was having some conflicts at work and she just, there's no better way to understand someone than to hear their own word. So I think it was, while it wasn't what you were looking for, I think it was really meaningful by the time it was done.
Yeah.
And from there, I want to move over to another returning student from last year who is we did get an addition. Lexi joined us later. But Gracie is a senior. As we're recording this, she only has how many days of school left?
19 now.
19, yeah.
19 days of high school left, and she's still hard at work on her case. So, Gracie, before we get into your case, since you've been doing this, and you've been with me since I got here, for all the way from the intro class or the advanced class, the investigative journalism class, you're one of my master students now. Can you talk about like what particularly the investigative journalism program and class means to you?
The investigative journalism class is very important to me because it's part of how I connect with the world, share my voice, and really feel like I'm making a difference. I was a little wallflower when I started out here, so this class has been sort of me proving to myself that I can really do something. By putting in enough effort, I can show people what students like us are capable of, because we are so often underestimated, hence the name of the podcast. So it's a very important role that we've put ourselves into, trying to bring attention to these different people that have maybe been forgotten, that don't have a voice. We're showing that they're more than murder victims or missing persons or anything like that.
Speaking of which, your series last year was, you titled it Voiceless,
mm-hmm.
in season one of Underestimated. And that was a series of missing person cases from Michigan, not popular ones that were, you know, covered on documentaries and social media and all over the place. And you gave them that voice. And we got a lot of feedback from that, from family members of some of those victims that even, you know, 6 months, 8 months later, we're sending emails to the school just saying, hey, I heard this and I just want to thank the students for actually paying attention to my missing loved one. So it's really cool for me as a teacher to see how you guys are like having a real impact outside of the school walls. And also to see, like you said, Gracie was I think wallflower is a great way to describe it. Like when I met Gracie, she was a sophomore and you had been in online school the year before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like your first year back, my first year here. Was, you know, very quiet. And it's just watching you now leading a group and organizing and assigning tasks. It's been a cool transformation to watch. Do you feel like you've changed and grown as a person over these 3 years?
Definitely. There have been a lot of changes in my life. And I'm happy to say that they're very much towards the positive end of things. But your classes as a whole, not just investigative journalism, have definitely been a part of that change, because it's a very personal thing, connecting with these people and their families on a personal level. it helps you push past those boundaries of, oh, I'm shy, I'm afraid, because this is something that's important to me. This is something that is worth talking about.
Yeah. And I always think it's funny as an old man like myself watching all of you guys when you need to call someone, like not a text, not an email, but actually call someone on the phone and watching the anxiety sweep over you when you have to speak to strangers.
It is terrifying, but it's important. It's a certain level of being able to set aside all that anxiety for something that you think is worth more. The worst they can say is no.
Right. While we're on that topic, so tell us about the case that you're going to be covering, because the only one in the audience has heard yet so far is the follow-up to Jeanette. And so tell us about the case that your team's working on.
My team is working on the case of Brandy Peltz, a little girl who unfortunately died in Argus in 1986. This case originally caught my eye because my sisters used to live in Argus. Mm-hmm. That was an area that I got to know through going over there every spring break and seeing the area and stuff like that. And it's a very small town. This wasn't a case that got a lot of news coverage or anything like that. So I thought that in following the tradition from last year, I could get eyes on a case that a lot of people weren't talking about. And in this case, it felt especially important because Brandy was so young. She was just 11 years old when she unfortunately passed. And now still there's very little actual information about her. There's very little pursuance of suspects. We unfortunately weren't able to get case files because her case has gone cold. But despite they're still working on it, there hasn't been any movement for the past 40 years.
Yeah. And that's frustrating because, they're saying it's cold but active, so they wouldn't give you FOIA requests. But you guys were able, and you guys will hear some of this, but you guys were able to track down some witnesses and get on the phone. It's always fun for me when, of course, you guys are getting ready to do an interview with a stranger and everybody's all keyed up and nervous and scared and they come into the recording room to do it. And then you guys, I remember you and Elena coming out early in the first semester, like just coming out like, oh my God, we found out this. And like, because you guys are discovering, once you like get past that barrier and you're starting to discover things. So it's been a really cool process. And now I want to move, I'm going to swing that microphone over to Colton.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Colton is in his second year with me. He was in the intro class last year. He's one of our up-and-comers, and he's kind of helping to lead his group this year. And Colton, your group is doing something really unique. This class, when I originally gave the assignment last year, at the beginning of the year, and the same assignment you guys got this year, which was find a situation outside of these school walls where you can have a positive impact on the world. Everyone has done true crime. And you and your group chose something very unique, has nothing to do with true crime. So if you can, explain to us what your group's series is going to be about and why you decided to do it.
Definitely. My group chose Purrs and Politics. And the reason why we chose it is because our world has become so divided between politics and voting, and all social media have just become all that as well. It is very concerning to see because we are teens becoming young adults in this world. And I personally do not want to live in a world where politics are so driven between many, many sorts of media.
Well, and a lot of it, I remember when you guys came to the conclusion, because we did, in the first semester, we did our Roundtable Mondays. So an effort to teach the students how to really approach stories from a neutral, unbiased angle, right? When you know, how to be journalists. We would pick topics that were in the news that were just like getting all the headlines and everyone was talking about on social media. And we would like have a conversation about them and talk about what are your perceptions, what's being said. And I would make you guys do like live fact checking. Like if you'd make a claim, they're like, well, where did that come from? What's the source? And, you know, it was in some of this. So think about what's going on at the beginning of the school year. Charlie Kirk was assassinated on September 10th. That was right at the beginning. We talked about that one. And of course, so that led a lot of like discussion about a lot of hostile media and social media. And it was, from my memory, it was like during those conversations. And I remember you specifically, and I've quoted this to people before. I remember you specifically saying, I don't understand why we as teenagers can see the divide here and how people are, how everyone's being manipulated, and the adults can't. I remember you saying that to me, and that sort of spurred the discussion that led to you guys trying to answer that question, right?
Yes. It's just so shocking for me to see in my group also that us as teenagers see how wrong and how unstable this world has become with politics, and we see this huge divide, and it sucks, honestly.
Well, and there's consequences that you guys really hit on the head, and I know like everybody's nervous here being here, sitting here with me. For some reason, teacher being in the room makes them all, if we go in there, they pick on me relentlessly, but
right?
Yeah. But in here, I'm finally in charge. But there was a very practical problem that you guys were identifying, and it was that, not to put words in your mouth, but the way you guys kind of presented to me was, people are so divided politically that they're not just electing, but supporting people who have done terrible, awful things that we would never support but for their political affiliation. And that was a big thing that you guys looked into. Can you talk a little bit about, because speaking of boldness, making a phone call is one thing. Some members of your group went out and did something even more nerve-wracking.
During a fall festival in local Niles area, we went to go interview random people to ask, what do you think the political party's views are on abortion, immigration, and gun control? And that was for our first episode. And we were really shocked to see how many people responded, but also how many people wanted to stay out of it because it's such a touchy topic. And then also we had many students from Brandywine and Niles and Buchanan tell us like how they felt. It's a crazy thing to think about, that kids our age and teenagers are thinking about what's going on in this world, and people don't realize how it's going to affect us when we grow into adults.
And I was really interested in the results that you guys got too from the adults who did respond to you, and the fact, because to really kind of put a point on it, part of what they were inquiring about in that survey was, people are so angry about what one side or the other side is doing, saying, thinking. But in a lot of situations, they don't actually know what the parties really stand for. You know, so their views are, so they were going in and asking, you know, not what do you think about abortion, but what do you think the Republican Party's views are on abortion? And what do you think the Democrat Party's views are on abortion and all these various hot topic issues? And I found it really fascinating that the results you guys got back is that for the most part, nobody actually knows what the parties themselves stand for. They only know, like where, what did you find? Where did they actually find most of their information about how they view their team's views?
Mostly on social media and news outlets who are party affiliated with their political party. So let's say if you go to Fox News, they're really Republican, and CNN are really Democratic. And when they get that information, they only see it from that side and they only believe it from that side. And also same thing with social media. If their feed is full of Democratic views and all that, all they're going to see is from the Democratic side. Same thing with Republican. And all the truth gets buried beneath all the lies and misconceptions. And it's just, it's like muddy water. It's like you can't really get to the most cleanest part of it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I want to circle back and talk a little bit about, you know, that experience for all of you guys as far as, you know, really learning to cut through narratives and try to find actual source materials. And we have a lot of just discussion. Well, not right now. We're in full production mode now. First semester, we had a lot of, there's a lot of like discussion time just in general. And there's a lot of, you know, somebody came and say, hey, did you see this on the news? And, you know, I'll generally say, did that really happen? Check it. Tell me if it really happened. Because in most cases, regardless of which side it came from, it didn't. Before we get kind of get any more discussions about that, I want to move over to Tegan. Tegan's a little nervous. Tegan is a new student to me this year, new to investigative journalism and the program in general. She's a workhorse and has done an amazing job with her team. And the case that they're covering, Tegan actually discovered it. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the case that you found.
My case focuses around a teen girl from the 1980s. She went missing summer of 1982. Her name is Kim Marie Laro. I don't exactly remember how I found out about her, but it was at the beginning of the year when we were given the task to find something to cover. When I found her, I just felt very connected. I don't know how to describe it, but I just felt like connected to her. That's the word. Kim is, she's missing. She's not confirmed dead. She is a missing person, but she went missing in the summer of 1982 after walking to a park that she was going to meet her best friend at. She saw her best friend at the ice cream parlor that she worked at. She told her friend Brenda that she was going to meet her at the park later on, but Brenda never saw Kim again.
And no one has seen her again.
No,
since
never.
Then. And how old was she? Did you say that?
She was 15 years old.
And what year was that?
1982.
So in her case, it's been covered a little bit, and you guys reached out to some of those creators, I think. A friend of mine and of our program from the Already Gone podcast, Nina Instead, I think did an episode on it. And you guys have her interviewed on an episode, right?
Yeah, I think it's episode one.
Episode one, we hear from Nina.
Thing about our cases, it started as just one girl. It started as Kim, but as we read on, it turned into a bunch of as we read on, we found about this man named Arthur Ream, which is the suspected killer of Kim. Well, there's a bunch of suspected victims that he has. As we read on, I discovered Kim, of course, at first. And then as I went through the case throughout the year, I found more girls that could possibly be connected to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the killer or the suspected killer only has one confirmed victim, and that's Cindy Zarzicki. She was 13 when she was murdered. She's the only confirmed victim of Arthur Ream. She was his son's girlfriend, and Ream invited her to a surprise birthday party for his son, but there wasn't an actual party. It wasn't a real party. So he tricked her.
Oh, wow. So I didn't even know.
I didn't know that either yet.
Yeah. I've been watching you guys work, and it's been cool to see.
Yeah. There's just so many girls that it's hard to focus on one of them. So it's just been crazy, focusing. There's at least five of these girls that we have been trying to figure out what happened to.
Yeah. And are all five just missing?
Cindy Zarzicki's the only confirmed murdered one, and Donna Sarah, but her killer is not confirmed.
Okay.
Arthur Ream did kill Cindy Zarzicki, but Donna Sarah is the only one that is confirmed dead.
And then there's other missing persons that you think are also
the
connected.
The other three or four girls are suspected victims of Arthur Ream.
From the work you guys have been doing, because you guys just earlier or at the end of last week did a couple of interviews, one with a police officer and one with someone who is somehow connected to Ream?
To be honest, someone else in my group, Emery, she does all the mainly interview stuff. She found this woman named Emma. She's somehow connected to Arthur Ream, but we did an interview with her, and she was there when the police were led to Cindy's body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I feel like she told us that she saw things. Visions.
Uh-huh.
Like that.
We kind of had a girl like that with the Jeanette Robinson
case.
Yeah.
She said that she, when she went out there to the place where they thought that the girls were buried, she felt energy. She felt them around them. She felt just the vibe. I don't know how to explain it. I asked her to elaborate because when she said she feels them around her, I asked her to elaborate.
Their spirits?
Yeah. I asked her do you mean you feel them
inside, like personally, like, or like around you.
Is that, when you guys came out of that, that was Friday, right? You guys came out of that interview and were like, wow.
It was very interesting. I've never met anyone that's like.
Didn't she have some, or didn't we think that she knew someone that like went to school with Arthur Rehm, or there was like some kind of connection?
I thought she was the one that went to school with Arthur Rehm, but it turned out that her mother worked with Cindy's mother, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. But she's connected like locally, like actually knew them. Yeah,
she is local, but not directly to the case, but she has worked with the police to find like things because she's seen things.
Yeah. It's interesting because you guys, like you and Chelsea, had kind of like opposite problems, but they both kind of become problems when it comes to production. Whereas, you know, Chelsea is having a hard time getting anybody to talk to her, finding anyone, you know, and you covered the case so in depth last year and is like trying to find new information to move forward. And then you guys are just getting bombarded with new information the whole year, but it's all scattering you all over the place.
At first, it wasn't a lot because we just had Kim, and it's not really a big case at all. Like, she barely had any coverage. Like I said, I don't even remember how I found her. I was just looking through things, and I found her, and I felt that connection. But later on, like I said, we just found all these other girls, and it just kept going. So now we have just a lot to work with, but also not at the same time because...
trying to organize it what does that episode sound like?
Yeah.
What do you guys think, just anybody who wants to grab a mic and talk about it, about the process of turning data into a story? Because that's usually shift in the semester when we go from we're done investigating, now we got to start writing scripts, is always a struggle at first. Yeah, go ahead, Colton.
It's interesting to say the least. It is kind of a struggle to get used to, like writing the scripts and like learning how to fully write a good script. And I feel like my group is at least on track to be writing good scripts.
It's tricky doing it in a group too.
Yeah.
Because you had it a little easy this year. Well, you didn't have to write much script.
Yeah. Groups can sometimes be a little irritating.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like organizing the data for me, last year we had so much. Like we had Jenny Decker's little case file, and then we got the full one from State. And then we also had like just like all the interviews from Jen. And it was just like so much. And you kind of have to be creative when you put it into an outline. And you really, really have to be good at English class, writing your outline. Yeah. Like, I was like, holy crap, I'm so happy I took English 101 class. And I was like, you have to be creative.
You got to know how to organize all the information that you like collected.
But
and,
you
like,
have to make
found.
It make sense.
And there's just so much. And you find like after all the articles you go through, it seems like all the same stuff over and over. Then you seem like you just are finding the same stuff, but you got to keep looking through it and things. And
it takes a lot of skill to be able to step back and present this to someone who doesn't know anything. Because it's one thing to sit here and just spill all the information you have, but that gets discordant and disconnected. So you have to put it together in the form of a story, in the form of something that's interesting, that works for a podcast. And It is very difficult, but it's also very interesting. It teaches you to look at things from another perspective, both when investigating and then shifting your focus to think of things as a listener.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it teaches you to know your audience.
It's fun, yeah. I'm not saying it isn't.
Yeah, it's and I'll tell you, like, from someone I've made thousands of podcast episodes. And for me, like, that's always the most stressful part of my week when I'm putting an episode out, when it's like investigate, interview, gather data, get all the information. And I feel like I'm really cooking. I'm getting all this stuff done. I've learned how to speak their language. They're all very impressed. You should see their faces. They're
get
in
out
awe,
of the
right?
frying pan.
Yeah, okay.
Get out, keep that 6-7 joke in.
No cap.
Oh my God. You're like that weird uncle at like
the family reunion that you see like connect. 5 times in your whole life.
And they're like, what up, my dog? And you're like, so we actually haven't said that since like the 2000s.
I usually catch on to your guys' terminology about 3
Do
months
you?
After
okay,
you stop.
What does egoed mean?
About 3 months after you stop using it.
What does egoed mean?
What does egoed mean? Why are you guys supposed to be interviewing me?
Come on.
Egoed is
what's your
when
about?
Someone big times you, right? They like big league you. like I did with Idris Elba.
We are not so talking like, about so like, that.
Say Colton like compliments my outfit and I just like don't say anything.
Yeah, you big league him.
I guess.
So that's like the 1980s.
So that's the 1980s version.
Maybe if you're a hippie.
Well, I was going to just wrap this up by telling you how proud I am of these young adults, but now now I'm going to ego them. Did I use that right?
No, because now you're like, you're responding to us.
Yeah. Right.
But no, seriously, you guys have all done an amazing job. I can't wait to hear the rest of the episodes coming out. And part of what we got to do today is decide now that Chelsea's next episode is airing on Wednesday. You guys are still working on yours, the partisan politics one with Colton. So who's next?
I think I am.
Tegan's up next. You guys have your...
I think Kim Marie Lario's next.
There we go. That's going to be coming up next Wednesday. So you guys are hearing this on Sunday. So in just 3 days, if you're not already subscribed to the Underestimated podcast, make sure you go check it out. There's 26 episodes from season one out there to listen to. Season two has two episodes out from Chelsea. And coming up on Wednesday, you're going to hear about from Tegan and Brendan and Kenna and Emery, who are the group covering the Kim Lero case. That'll probably be followed by Gracie's group, who's doing the Brandy Peltz case, followed by Colton's group that is doing the partisan politics case. Oh, and Chelsea is moving over to that group. So.
Whoop, whoop.
Woo!
Are we still saying whoop whoop, guys? Is that
that's
cool?
That's only Tegan saying.
Yeah. Only Tegan. Yeah. That's only a Tegan thing.
So don't be coming into class saying whoop whoop.
Yeah, no, I'm
hip hip hooray,
hip hip
cheerio,
hooray,
a query.
And with all that being said, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up so I can go and write referrals for all of these yahoos.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'll talk to you guys next week. We'll have another Justice Warrior on, but these are four young adult justice warriors that I am thoroughly impressed with, and I can't wait for you guys to hear their work. So tune in to Underestimated, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. Doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.